as the 1860s dawned, everyone who had a navy worth the title was acquiring ironclads for themselves. The Spanish navy, which although much diminished from its former glory, still saw itself as a serious force, was no exception to this trend. Except they had one small problem. Since the end of the Napoleonic Wars, the Armada had built and commissioned exactly two capital ships, and those were between 1,500 to 2,500 tons lighter than the really big first rates that the top-end navies were building at the same time. That, of course, meant that Spanish industrial capacity was in no way, shape or form ready to build its own large ironclads. However, the government had determined it wanted to expand the fleet and its industrial capabilities, and so a whole slew of steam-powered wooden warships were ordered at the end of the 1850s and start of the 1860s, with a pair of contracts for large armoured ships being drawn up with foreign dockyards to provide such vessels, while the larger homegrown facilities were created. A smaller ironclad was also ordered from Ferrol, and another small one from Britain. One of the contracts for the large ships went to the UK, but the other, which would enter service first, ended up going to France, specifically to a shipyard whose abbreviated name, believe it or not, was Forges et Chantiers de la Méditerranée, which would actually end up building a large number of foreign warships over the latter half of the 19th century. Laid down in the autumn of 1862, the new ironclad, named Numancia, took advantage of recent French innovations in their own yards and would therefore have a largely iron construction, with wood only really present for the deck, backing of the armour, and a few non-essential areas, much like the ironclad Couronne. After just over a year on the stocks, she was launched and then commissioned at the end of 1864. As built, she displaced around 7,300 tons and was capable of just under 13 knots, thanks to almost 3,800 indicated horsepower driving a single propeller, with three masts available for sail power. Protection consisted of a full-length belt that was 5.1 inches thick at the waterline, thinning down to 4.7 inches at gun deck level. Although built in France, the Spanish actually ordered her armament from the UK. And here there is a bit of a problem, as Spanish records and sources of the time are somewhat contradictory as to exactly what guns she carried and when. One of the better sources, relying on Spanish primary documents, for instance, lists her as starting life with 40 British 68-pounder smoothbore guns, then being rearmed in 1867 with six 9-inch Armstrong rifled muzzle loaders and 860mm Spanish-built rifled muzzle loaders in the main battery, along with three lighter-weight Armstrong 9-inch muzzle-loading rifled guns on the upper deck. Then, in 1883, being rearmed again with eight 10-inch Armstrong rifled muzzle loaders plus seven of the lighter 9-inch muzzle-loading rifles from earlier. Then, in 1896, receiving five Spanish-built 130-pound or 6.3-inch breech-loading rifled guns and eight French Canet 5.5-inch breech-loading rifles, plus a pair of small torpedo tubes. But the exact listings vary from source to source, and there's often a degree of imprecision in exactly what gun is which, due to the rather complicated translation process between guns that are measured in pounds of shot, tons of gun, inches of calibre, and millimetres of calibre. After arriving in Spain, she was loaded up with everything, including the kitchen sink, and then sent over to South America, where relations with various foreign countries that had formerly been part of the Spanish Empire were not so good, and were rapidly spiralling into what would be dubbed the Chincha Islands War. After multiple recoaling stops across the Atlantic and a little bit of a side-eye voyage partially alongside a Peruvian warship, she eventually made it to the Pacific to discover that full-scale war with Peru had apparently been averted by diplomatic efforts. However, this quickly turned into a war with Chile instead. Despite the Spanish government frantically ordering the Spanish admiral in charge to back off, he refused to do so, and soon Ecuador and Peru piled in on the Chilean side. Soon, the South American countries were capturing Spanish ships, the Spanish were capturing South American ships, Bolivia joined in on the side of its sister countries, and the Spanish fleet bombarded Valparaiso and Callao. Numancia stood up fairly well to enemy fire, but with some of the other less heavily protected ships damaged and the whole of the Pacific coast now closed to him, the newly promoted Admiral Mendez Nunes, after the former admiral shot himself, was forced to withdraw across the Pacific and head for home. Running out of coal part way along, Numancia had to sail across most of the Pacific under literal sail power, with the fleet eventually arriving home having recalled in Manila in late 1867. After a refit, she spent some time in Mediterranean waters until in 1873 she sided with the Republican or Cantonalist forces in a relatively little-known Spanish Civil War. With armoured and unarmoured ships on both sides, she led the separatist squadron at the Battle of Portmán, although this failed to break the government blockade at that time. Eventually, the separatist movement collapsed, but the Numancia actually escaped to French North Africa with a large number of passengers who didn't fancy their chances under central government rule, although the ship itself was soon returned to Spanish control. After all that excitement and a refit, she shifted use to a part-time training ship and part-time royal yacht from 1876 to 1898, with brief diversions in 1886 to square off against the German fleet in the Western Pacific, and in 1893 to shoot up Morocco, a favoured pastime of Spanish ships in the late 19th century. She was due to be converted to a coastal defence ship when the Spanish-American War cleared the deck of most of Spain's more modern fleet, and so she was rearmed yet again in 1900 to serve as a sort of antiquated auxiliary cruiser until the fleet could be brought back up to strength. With a brief diversion to shoot up Morocco again in 1909, she was mostly used as a training and guest ship until finally being decommissioned in 1912. Although there was much call for her preservation, she was in the end sold for scrap in 1916, but she decided to run herself ashore on the way to the breakers instead, and although partly salvaged, a good chunk of the wreck is still there off the southwest coast of Portugal.
That's it for this video. Thanks for watching. If you have a comment or suggestion for a ship to review, let us know in the comments below. Don't forget to comment on the pinned post for dry dock questions.